Culture Affidavit episode 173. Not a problem. Hello, and welcome to episode 173 of Pop Culture Affidavit, the podcast that takes a look at everything random in the world of popular culture, which is brought to you by the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network. I'm your host, Tom Panarese. Last episode, I did a rundown of the first decade of the Fox Network, going through the history of the network as well as a number of the shows, with some focus on ones that I remembered very well or liked. And as the episode ended, I said there was one show that I had neglected throughout the entire episode, which was Parker Lewis Can't Lose. And that's because I wanted to give the show its own episode. So I'm going to play a quick trailer. And after that, I'm going to talk about the show, its history, its aesthetic, some of my favorite episodes, and its impact. Stick around.
And action! It's Fade Out. Hosted by film fanatic Rob Kelly and a roster of special guests, Fade Out will examine the final films of Hollywood's brightest lights, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Parker Lewis Can't Lose premiered on September 2nd, 1990 on the Fox Network. It ran for three seasons, with the last episode airing on June 13th, 1993, with a total of 73 episodes. Executive produced by Clyde Phillips and Columbia Television Studios, the show was originally pitched to CBS back in 1987, but they passed on it and Fox eventually picked it up, airing it in the Sunday night at 7:30 time slot between True Colors and In Living Color. It ran opposite the ABC family drama Life Goes On, 60 Minutes, and the NBC high school musical drama Hull High. Hull High would be canceled in December and replaced by a show called Sunday Best, which was basically a clip show of everything that NBC had aired the previous week. Most notably, as far as television competition is concerned, NBC also broadcast the television series version of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, titled Ferris Bueller, with Charlie Schlatter taking on the title role, Jennifer Aniston in the Jennifer Grey role of Jeannie, and Amy Dolenz, who was in She's Out of Control and is the daughter of Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees, as Sloane Peterson. Those are the most notable cast members of that show, although I found it interesting that two of the actors from that Just the 10 of Us episode I blogged about a few weeks ago were also on the show. Brandon Douglas played Cameron and Christine Rose played Barbara Bueller. Anyway, Ferris Bueller was a notable bomb of a sitcom. At best, it's a trivia item because of Jennifer Aniston's presence in the cast. Plus, it often gets compared to Parker Lewis Can't Lose, which was a take on Ferris Bueller and outdid the show. In fact, I definitely see elements of the John Hughes movie in Parker Lewis, despite the fact that the very first episode had a joke about the plot being something like out of a John Hughes movie. The show's third season featured a title change as the show simply became Parker Lewis, and it began in the summer of 1992 with a set of six summer season episodes, kind of like 90210 had been doing, starting on July 16, 1992 and ending on August 20th. The fall premiere was on September 3rd, but it only aired four episodes, and the show was bumped for the Tobey Maguire sitcom Great Scott. When that show was canceled, Batman the Animated Series picked up. Parker Lewis re-aired beginning in March, airing its 11 remaining episodes starting on March 21st. The series finale was broadcast on June 13th, 1993. The show's ratings hovered around the 9 to 10 million viewers a week mark, with some episodes reaching as high as 12 million, but the back half of the last season saw it barely hitting 5 million viewers. The concept of the show was that the main character, Parker Lewis, was, well, the Ferris Bueller of Santo Domingo High School in Santo Domingo, California. Plots did tend to be typical sitcom-y things here and there, especially revolving around typical teen show things like girls, school, and family issues. But what made the show unique was how it presented most of the situations. There was a fair amount of absurdity via sound effects and visual gags, as well as a good amount of self-awareness and meta-commentary. Parker was played by Corin Nemec, whose most notable role up to that point was on Webster, as well as the TV movie I Know My First Name as Steven. After Parker Lewis, he'd have a big role in the TV miniseries version of The Stand, as well as roles on Stargate SG-1 and Supernatural. Like I said, there's definitely Ferris Bueller in the character, along with a bit of Zach Morris. The character is often seen wearing loud print shirts, and his catchphrases are "not a problem" and "coolness" to describe something cool. Nemec played the character as cool but self-aware, was helped by his voiceover narration that ran throughout every episode. He had the arrogance of Ferris Bueller, but also the charm of Matthew Broderick. So that worked very well in his favor. Parker had two best friends, making them a trio that referred to themselves as the Buds. One was Mikey Randall, played by Billy Jane, who had also been credited as Billy Jacoby, and had roles in Cujo and Just One of the Guys, as well as a number of television series as both a child actor and adult. One piece of trivia about his career is that his ex-wife April was on the TLC reality show MILF Manor. I do also remember Billy Jane in ads for the shoe store Tom McCann. Anyway, Mikey is this guitar-playing guy who's ensconced in rock and roll and dresses like he could have had a gig at a club on any given night. The other Bud is Jerry Steiner, who's played by Troy Slayton. He's an actor who had a number of small television roles before retiring from acting in 1999. Much like Billy Jane on the Tom McCann commercial, I believe I remember Troy Slayton being in a Reese's Pieces or Reese's Peanut Butter Cup commercial around this time, too. He's currently an attorney in California and sometimes makes television appearances as a legal analyst on news shows. Jerry is the nerd of the group. He's kind of a cross between Screech from Saved by the Bell and Paul from The Wonder Years. He's constantly calling Parker and Mikey Mr. Lewis and Mr. Randall, or Sir, as if he's their intern or something. In fact, anytime Jerry reaches into his trench coat for something, there's a sound of Velcro tearing. So those are the main three characters, but there are other number of characters who have prominent roles. First, there is Larry Kubiak, or Kub, played by Abraham Ben-Ruby. He went on to a recurring role on ER. Kub is a huge football player with an insatiable appetite. In fact, most of the gags with him on the show involve him saying, "eat now," and being fed enormous amounts of food. In fact, one of my favorite lines is when he's about to go eat a room full of Jell-O and Parker says, "Kub, you just ate 50 pizzas." And Kub responds, "there's always room for Jell-O." In the pilot of the series, Kub is introduced as this landmass of a bully, the guy nobody wants to cross. But over the course of the show, he actually becomes friends with the Buds and is more this kind of Fezzik type of like gentle giant. Kub does get some of the best visual gags, though. There's a little sister character played by Maya Bruton, that's Shelley Lewis. Prior to Parker Lewis, she had roles in two well-known 80s movies, playing Lorraine's younger sister and Marty McFly's aunt in Back to the Future. She's in the dinner scene where they watch the honeymooners at the table. And then she also, more famously, played the Thor-obsessed Sarah in Adventures in Babysitting. Shelley is more or less the scheming pest of a younger sister character, a freshman at Santo Domingo who manipulates people where she can and is always looking for a way to take her brother down. And then there is Principal Grace Musso. She was played by Melanie Chartoff, who prior to Parker Lewis was a cast member on the short-lived sketch show Fridays, which also starred Michael Richards and Larry David. And she steadily worked as a character actor on TV for many years. She would go on to be the voice of Dee Dee Pickles on the Nickelodeon cartoon Rugrats. Musso is Parker's arch nemesis, trying to get him expelled at every turn. She's also single and obsessed with the idea of finding a man and getting married. What she's most known for are, much like Jerry's trench coat, are two specific bits. The glass in the door of her office shattering when she slams it or screams, and the sound effect of a swoosh whenever she makes a "go to my office" thumb gesture. She has a weasel of a right-hand man, Frank Lemmer, who's played by Taz Johnson. He walks around wearing all black, has a ponytail, and is Smithers if Smithers was a scheming vampire. There are other characters on the show. Timothy Stack played Parker and Shelley's father, Martin, who owns a video store, and in season 1, episode 10, has his 1970 class reunion, where he sees that he had his own set of friends and pulled a prank on Musso involving Jell-O back when they were in high school. Parker's mom, Judy, was played by Mary Ellen Trainer in the pilot and Bloom in the first season, and then Trainer returned to play the role in seasons 2 and 3. You'll recognize Mary Ellen Trainer from a number of 80s movies. First one that comes to mind is she is the psychologist for the police department in Lethal Weapon 2. Parker also began dating a girl in the middle of season 2 named Annie Sloan. She was played by actress Jennifer Guthrie. Other recurring characters include Dr. Norman Pankow, played by Garrett Graham, who's a rival principal that's somehow worse than Musso. Nick Comstock, played by Paul Johansson. He played a teacher in 90210 on like the senior year season, and at one point he was also on One Tree Hill. He's the owner of the Atlas Diner in season 2. And then there's Coach Hank Kohler, played by John Panette, who debuts in season 3, episode 1. And is obsessed with Grace Musso and eventually is the owner of the Atlas Diner. Being that this is a sitcom and doesn't have a running storyline the way that, say, a primetime soap or drama series does, I don't have to give lengthy summaries of the events of the season as well as give you what happens in every episode. Instead, I'm going to give you an overview of the show and mention some elements or moments that I found memorable. The show's a single-camera sitcom. And meaning that, as Corin Nemec said in an interview one time, that they were, quoting, shooting it like a movie. So there's no laugh track, there's no studio audience. It always opens with a joke that's pretty much the couch gag of the episode. That is, various characters are shown doing something, such as looking in the fridge for something, while the title comes on the screen bit by bit, and ends with Parker winning or getting the thing that everybody's kind of looking for or whatever we're talking about.
Joe, have you seen my new jeans? I have a date tonight.
Sorry, you lose, Park.
Are you sure you haven't seen my jeans, Shelley? Your Depeche Mode tickets were in the pocket.
Seasons 1 and 2 take place at Santo Domingo High School. Season 1 also features a number of scenes at the Lewis's video store, Mondo Video. The video store makes a couple of appearances in season 2, but it's mainly set aside for the Atlas Diner, which I'm sure was a definite nod to the Peach Pit on 90210 or the Max on Saved by the Bell. In fact, the diner is one of the dominant fixtures in season 3, as much of it takes place during the summer. By the back half of that season, they were back in the school, although the character Frank Lemmer had been written out of the show by that point. And the very last episode takes place solely at the diner. In fact, this third season begins with a slight change in direction, as the Can't Lose is dropped from the title, and Parker narrates that his image needs to change. So the loud shirts and the Gumby haircut, as he calls it, were gone, and another bully character, Brad, was introduced. What set the show apart from a number of sitcoms of the time was, like I said, it was a single camera instead of multi-camera sitcom, and there was also the use of absurdity in camera work and sound effects. In fact, according to a 2023 Mental Floss article, a number of the sound effects came from the Hanna-Barbera library. There was also breaking the fourth wall and being metatextual. In a 2019 interview on Bullseye.com, Nemec talked about how he was approached to be on the show after the creators saw him on a TV special called What's Alan Watching? He played Alan, and he, quote, viewed his world as a TV show, at least according to what IMDb says in the show description. The creators were huge fans of that show and huge fans of Nemec's performance, and Nemec also noted that another inspiration for how Parker Lewis Can't Lose was filmed, saying, here's a quote from that interview, They told me that they wanted to shoot it very much in the style 3 o'clock High with Casey Simasco, which was very, very stylized as far as the cinematography goes. And I was just like, absolutely. And it certainly was the best choice and the smartest choice I could have made at the time. And, you know, I had seen 3 o'clock High in theaters, actually, and currently I actually own the Blu-ray. But I remember catching the movie on WPIX one random afternoon. This was in the early 90s, so Parker Lewis had been on the air at least for a season or two by then. And I immediately spotted the Parker Lewis of it all. And I always wondered if Parker Lewis took some cues from 3 o'clock High. So it was pretty cool to see Nemec confirm that in an interview. So, like I said, it's not so much that the show has an ongoing storyline or episodes that stand out to me. It really is consistently good. It's one of those shows you can just keep watching, especially throughout the first two seasons. But I'll throw out some moments and episodes I love from the run in case you're interested in just kind of sampling a few or knowing like the ones that I remember the most. In fact, a number of these I remembered very, very clearly over the years, and it wasn't until I was prepping this show that I watched Parker Lewis for the first time since it was originally on. It was put on DVD by the Shout Factory back in, 10, 11 years ago, but they only did one and two, and I'll talk about, like, where it's available streaming, but season three was always hard to get. So, anyway, here's some moments, here's some episodes that I do love from the run. Season 1, Episode 7, Love's a Beast. A great episode where Mikey has a secret admirer. He thinks this is cute blonde named Becky, but it's actually Shelley. It also has a subplot of Parker in detention, and Parker keeps sneaking out of detention. He makes friends with the heavy metal punk guys in detention, kind of like Some Kind of Wonderful. And then at one point, they have to get back to detention before they get caught, and Jerry's running with him, and Jerry slips and falls and goes, "No, sir, save yourself." Season 1, Episode 8, Saving Grace. This is the episode that introduces Musso's rival, Dr. Pankow, who takes over as principal when Parker gets Musso demoted. Kind of a careful what you wish for type of scenario, because Parker has to help Musso get her job back because Pankow is like sadistic and vicious in a Bond villain sort of way. It's actually one of the best examples of let's play up the insanity that this show is. Season 1, Episode 10, Deja Dudes. I mentioned this episode briefly earlier. It's a great showcase for Timothy Stack. He was on Son of a Beach, I believe was the name of the show on E, and he's been in a number of other things. You'd recognize him if you saw him. Anyway, this is the episode where he has his high school reunion. One of the things about the buds is that, like, when they go on a quarterly mission, Parker will say synchronized swatches and they woof their hands together. Well, when Mr. Lewis and his dudes reunite, they synchronize bulbas. I always thought it was a funny episode of the adult take on these kind of guys back years after high school. This is also where Coob's There's Always Room for Jell-O line comes from, because Parker's dad had pranked Grace Musso with something to do with the Jell-O way back in the day. Season 1, Episode 15, Heather in the Class. Shelley ditches her best friend for a Heathers-esque group called the Vogues. This is actually a very well-done take on the film, and Maya Bruton, who plays Shelley, usually is this like little sister force of nature, does a great job with making the character vulnerable and sympathetic, and she does that several times over the course of the show. So the performances in general are just amazing. It's one of the things that makes the show so great and so repeatedly watchable. Season 1, Episode 16, Jerry, Portrait of a Video Junkie. The main plot is that Parker and Mikey are trying to get Jerry to kick his video game addiction. Really, the thing I like the most about this is not that particular plot, but the subplot where Grace's mother is coming to visit her. And she's played by Barbara Billingsley. And then Grace has a brother who's named Theodore, who's played by Jerry Mathers. The season finale of Episode 1 is Parker Lewis Can't Win. Parker's having like the worst day possible because Shelley's basically making it happen. But he wins in the end with help from a school caretaker janitor named Augie, who's played by Ray Walston, a.k.a. my favorite Martian and, of course, Mr. Hand from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. What I remember most about this episode actually is the final scene. They're sitting in the auditorium and the camera pulls back to show the director and the producers break down the set. It's kind of this metatextual fourth wall breaking moment. On to season two. Episode five is called The Undergraduate. It's a take on The Graduate with Shannon Tweed as a hot teacher that Parker has an infatuation for. He even kisses her, but it ends with her setting like boundaries, of course. It's a take on The Graduate, of course, and it uses the iconic under the lake shot very, very well. Season 2, Episode 6, Stormy Mikey. This one has special guest star Sonny Bono. Sonny Bono plays a crooked record exec who uses his daughter Claire, and she's played by Stacey Haddiak, who is Lana Lang on the Superboy show. So he uses Claire to lure him into a bad, like, record contract, and Claire eventually is like, I can't let you do this to him, and does the right thing and lets Mikey know. This episode also introduces Nick, you know, the diner owner. And they have him do this sort of like, I'm the sage, the bartender you go to tell your secrets and to dish out wisdom in a number of episodes. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So they kind of play that up here and there. Season 2, Episode 8, Aging Gracefully. So Musso's nearing 40 and she's freaking out about it. Pankow tries to exploit her feelings over it. The subplot is what I remember the most that I always liked was that Jerry gets a new computer and it more or less takes him over. And the computer is pretty much HAL 9000 from 2001 A Space Odyssey, to the point where Parker has to go into the computer and pull out the chips just like Dave Bowman does. Season 2, Episode 21, When Jerry Met Shelley. This is actually kind of a sweet one where Jerry wants to date Shelley. Parker, of course, suspects Shelley's up to something, but everything is really sincere. He has to realize, like, she's just not a bratty little sister anymore. There is an episode, and I apologize for like not actually going back and checking this, but where Jerry is like tasked with teaching Shelley how like manners and how to go on a date or something. And both of them say the equivalent of the only thing that she ever learned from him was that you don't eat soup with a fork. Again, these lines I remember like really, really well without ever actually having to watch the show. All right, getting back into it. Season 2, Episode 22 is Geek Tragedy. I'm just going to read the Wikipedia synopsis for this. When a young girl geek, Terry, played by Chelsea Lee, who idolizes Jerry, is let down by him and goes to the place where geeks go when they are forgotten, Jerry goes there to rescue her. And it has appearances by Jason Priestley, Shannon Doherty, Jenny Garth, Tori Spelling, Brian Austin Green, Luke Perry, Gabrielle Carteris, and Ian Ziering. Season 2, Episode 24, Home Alone with Annie. So at this point, Parker and Annie have been dating, and this episode's one of those, I'm all alone tonight, why don't you come over and we'll have sex for the first time episodes, but everything that could go wrong does, because like everybody shows up to the house, there's a big party, most of the furniture goes missing, Curtis Armstrong makes a cameo, and there's even an appearance by Martha Quinn. Season 3, Episode 1 is called Flamingo Graffiti. This, of course, is the slight retooling of the series that I mentioned earlier. Now, they just create the new title and everything, but some of the retooling is done in-universe. Parker consciously makes that adjustment. Get rid of the shirts, get rid of the Gumby haircut. The episode also introduces John Panette as Coach Hank Kohler, who's obsessed with Musso. And you might remember Panette. He was a stand-up comedian, pardon me for being politically incorrect, but this big fat guy, stand-up comedian. He would appear on The Tonight Show and things around here. I believe he had that bit about being the fat guy in a Chinese restaurant where they were all yelling him to leave because he had been there for 4 hours. He played Hank Kohler. My favorite part of this season premiere is this subplot. Jerry takes a summer school class that's a film class. Young MC plays the teacher, by the way, and he makes his own version of Boys in the Hood, which is a Jerry Steiner joint. Season 3, Episode 9, Lewis and Son. This is an episode where a competing video store opens up and Parker has to help his dad save the family business. It's one of the better episodes of the season. It was good to see the video store again, too, because by that point it had faded into the background since the first season. Season 3, episode 15, probably my favorite of the season 3 episodes, Write or Die. And here's the Wikipedia description. Mikey hasn't written his assignment for creative writing class and is in trouble if it is not written by next morning. His friends rally around him, but Mikey doesn't seem interested. Among storylines suggested is Mikey can't lose based on seasons 1 or 2 of the show. But Andy complains it's too cartoony. Also, a Santo Domingo 60609 based on Beverly Hills 90210. The show ends with Mikey doing an imitation of the Stephen J. Cannell show ending, you know, where he's typing at the thing and he chucks the paper in the air behind him. And then there's the final episode, which is called The Last Supper. The premise of the finale is that the diner is going to be demolished. Everyone is there on its last night. They were originally celebrating like the diner's like 50th or 60th anniversary, and now it's the last night the diner is there. The contractors are coming in throughout, and throughout the episode, they're trying to come up with ways to save it. But also throughout the episode, anybody time somebody goes to the jukebox and plays a song, the jukebox jogs their memories. So the finale's actually a clip show. And they do make some silly comments about how this seems to be like a magic jukebox or something. So it is done kind of like with a wink to the camera. But clip shows as series finales are a trope of series finales, especially sitcoms. I know that like around that time, Growing Pains had a clip show. And I believe that 70s show season series finale was a clip show as well. The one gag, though, that I found funny, it was like they said, they're trying to save the diner. Like, you know, they saved the Max, they saved the Peach Pit, and they fail. It ends with John Panette singing the song, I'll see you again, or we'll see each other again, whatever the song from the end of Dr. Strangelove is, as everything kind of comes down. And the one gag I found funny was that Jerry faxes the governor, say, can you save this? The governor basically faxes back a big no. And John Panette just looks at him and goes, I have a fax machine? So those are some episodes that I really liked, or moments I liked. There's so many others. It's really hard to kind of squeeze this all into one like 45-minute episode of a podcast. And I wanted to say that it really was one of my favorite shows back in the day. And really, it holds up incredibly well, at least for me. Yes, there are some very, you know, plot lines that are very like high school boy centered of the 90s, since you kind of have to roll with. But it's not as cringy as, say, some old episodes of other sitcoms tend to be. But, okay, it's special. I love it. But, I mean, I also liked the facts of life. So what is the specialness of it in my mind 35 years later? Well, as I did my rewatch, I noticed how Parker Lewis Can't Lose perfectly encapsulates the early 90s, especially that like 80s hangover period that lasted from 90 until about 92, 93. The loud shirts, the brightly colored Trapper Keeper aesthetic, the pixelated dissolve to commercials, it all felt like being back in junior high school for me. There's a ton of references to what was popular at the time or what was just in the popular culture at the time in some way or another. I mentioned the Boys to Hood reference when Jerry makes that film. There's a couple of jokes where they joke about the programs that were on opposite the show. There is a scene where they're scanning the crowd at one of Santo Domingo's games and somebody's holding a sign that says, thank you for not watching Hull High. And then later on in the third season or so, Musso uses an Erie, Indiana marathon as a punishment because Erie, Indiana also aired against Parker Lewis Can't Lose. Another thing is how the video store is filled with posters for then current movies. It honestly did look like a video store from the early 90s. In fact, I liked that the video store had such a presence on the show, especially even though it was just the first season for the most part, because it was like, I mean, at least for me, the video store was like a constant presence in my life back then. I think a lot of people in my generation remember the video store, especially the mom and pop video store, as opposed to, say, Blockbuster or Hollywood Video, even though a bunch of us, I'm sure we all have memories of Blockbuster. But, you know, that family-owned video store, definitely part of our childhood. And I like how they picked up on that's the type of thing that his parents would own and he would work in. And it was even though they got their kind of diner and some other things later on, this is a pretty good thing. Same goes for bands and video games. Mikey's always making references to rock and roll bands or songs and things like that. There's some references to then current singers and bands. There's a few jokes about bands that were considered a lot more lame, like Nelson, for instance. And then the episode where Jerry gets addicted to video games has so many late 80s and 90s video game references. It's really, really fun to see. And what's also fun for me were the random cameos. I mentioned the 90210 cast cameos from that one episode. I mentioned Sonny Bono, Barbara Billingsley, Jerry Mathers. In fact, Ken Osmond, who played Eddie Haskell, has a cameo at one point in season two. There was Young MC, Ziggy Marley and Cool Moe Dee appeared in an episode. Weird Al made an appearance, of course, at one point. Ozzy Osbourne had a cameo in an episode, and so did Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. Donny Osmond makes an appearance. I believe he meets Grace at one point. And there are roles by not one, but two of the original MTV VJs. I already mentioned Martha Quinn, but at one point in season two, Grace actually has a several episode arc where she's dating a doctor who's played by Mark Goodman, who was one of the original VJs. But as I was going through the show, I kept noting, here are a bunch of people that were on other TV shows or in other movies, both adults and teens. And I remember this being one of the things that was pretty common in the early 90s, especially among the teen actors, because teen movies were very much on the wane. And it was like everyone was going for the same three or four roles all the time. In fact, if you listen to the DVD commentary for Say Anything in Heathers, it's mentioned that two out of the three Heathers are in Say Anything because like they were all auditioning for the same projects and stuff. So anyway, I actually made a pretty long list of people who I noticed, again, both adults and teen actors. Julie Condra, she played Madeline on The Wonder Years for a season or two, and she was also in Erie, Indiana. Trivia note, she's married to Mark Dacascos, who was the chairman on Iron Chef America and played the lead in the 1993 movie Only the Strong. Kim Valentine, who I, and probably only I, remember from the short-lived Fox-produced afternoon soap Tribes. I wrote about that on the blog years ago. Robin Lively, who is, of course, sister to Blake Lively, but most importantly was the star of Teen Witch. Andrea Elson, who was the teenage daughter from Alf. David Faustino, Bud Bundy. In fact, he shows up on Parker Lewis wearing a Polk High t-shirt. Penny Johnson-Gerald plays an English teacher or a history teacher at one point, and she would go on to play the president's wife on the first season of 24. Tiffany Brissett, she was Vicky on Small Wonder. April Lerman, I recognize her from the first two seasons of Charles in Charge. Ryan Stiles from Whose Line Is It Anyway and The Drew Carey Show. Charles Rocket, who had been on Saturday Night Live back in the very early 80s, is also in How I Got Into College, as well as Dumb and Dumber. A.J. Langer, a.k.a. Rayanne Graff from My So-Called Life. Leanna Creel, who played Tori on Saved by the Bell. Now, she's one of a set of triplets, and her other two triplet sisters were on the Parker Lewis episode as well. Their names are Joy and Monica. Josie Bissett, who would go on to be on Melrose Place like a year or two after she had that small role on Parker Lewis as a girl that Parker gets attracted to at a mall. Sharon Case, who'd be on The Young and the Restless for many years. Brooke Theiss, who is from Just the Ten of Us. Martin Mull. Mark DiCarlo, the host of Studs. Robert Zemeckis. Lindsay Price, she'd go on to be the later seasons of 90210. I remember her as in a Toys R Us commercial years ago, too. Sam McMurray, who has been in a number of things. He was Neil's dad on Freaks and Geeks. It's one of those, you know this guy if you saw him. Dave Thomas, not the founder of Wendy's, the comedian. Brian Bonsall of Family Ties. Harry Anderson. Brittany Murphy. Michael Dorn. Wendy Jo Sperber, who at that time had been one of the stars of the Fox sitcom Babes. Bill Hartman, Christine Hodge, who was from Head of the Class. She was the redhead. She played Simone. Michelle Burke, who played Jodie Kramer in Dazed and Confused. And I want to say she played Connie Conehead in the Coneheads movie. and then Scott Wolf from Party of Five fame. I mean, seriously, it's a lot of people who showed up. And there were other cameos and things like by other people who might have been recognizable here and there. Now, the show faded into the background of popular culture and nostalgia after it went off the air. And while it's remembered, it's more or less, well, it's kind of like a forgotten and underrated sitcom from the 90s. And I agree, it was underrated. It was probably also ahead of its time. But it does have a legacy. The best example of the legacy of Parker Lewis Can't Lose is probably the NBC sitcom Scrubs. And this is from the Mental Floss article. In a 2018 retrospective for The Hollywood Reporter, Parker Lewis was cited as an inspiration for future shows that relied on live-action cartoon antics and frenetic camera work. Bill Lawrence was a Parker Lewis fan who went on to create Scrubs. Director Brian Spicer was offered a job by Steven Spielberg, who was a regular viewer of the show. Parker Lewis Can't Lose, by the way, can be found in a few places. Right now, as of when I'm recording this on July 13th, 2026, it's on Plex and the Roku channel for free, with ads, of course, if you are using their free services. And you can find some episodes and clips uploaded onto YouTube. And that'll do it for Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Mr. Lewis? Mr. Randall? Mr. Phillips? Hello?
Before I go, I do have one piece of feedback. Professor Allen messaged me about the last episode, and that was about the early days of the Fox Network. He said, early Fox, great stuff. I enjoyed Werewolf, though it was better than it needed to be, and I'm probably the only person who thought Duet was a solid TV rom-com. Thanks, Allen. If anyone else there wants to drop a comment, send me a message about this, about Fox, about anything else, go right ahead. Don't forget to find me on Blue Sky and Instagram. I've been trying to post more to both, especially Insta. And I'll be back in a few weeks, actually, with part two of a two-part crossover with Required Reading. The topic, The Odyssey. The next Required Reading should be coming out around July 21st. That will be a discussion by me and Stella about Homer's epic poem, specifically looking at the translation by Emily Wilson. And the next Pop Culture Affidavit episode will be about the Christopher Nolan film, which will be coming out this month as well. So come back for that. Check out the blog for new posts here and there. And as always, thank you very much for listening and take care. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Affidavit, which is hosted and produced by me, Tom Panarese. The theme music is Pop Rock by Scott Holmes and is used under Creative Commons licensing. You can contact and follow me via email at popcultureaffidavit@gmail.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Pop Culture Affidavit, and on Blue Sky as Pop Aff. That's P-O-P-A-F-F. And of course, you can find episode links, show notes, and blog posts on my website, popcultureaffidavit.com. Thanks very much for listening, and come back next time for more pop culture randomness.